We knew they needed what we had, but we didn't know how to insert ourselves in the market.
I'm Eric Wilson, managing partner of Startup Caucus, an investment fund and incubator for Republican campaign technology. Welcome to the Business of Politics show. On this podcast, we bring you into conversation with the entrepreneurs who build best-in-class political businesses, the funders who provide the capital, and the operatives who put it all together to win campaigns. Scott Tranter joins us today for the show. He's the CEO and founder of Optimus Analytics, a data science and technology company that's using AI and machine learning to transform data insights into actionable deliverables. Scott began his career in political campaigns and was the director of data science for Marco Rubio's 2016 presidential campaign. In this conversation, we dig into some of the challenges of digital innovation in this industry, scaling a business, and his recent acquisition experience. Scott, we first met in 2013 when you were first pitching Optimus. It was the first time I really got an education about the nuts and bolts of integrating data into political campaigning. You know, we heard a lot about it in 2012 with Obama. You were doing something that a lot of political entrepreneurs have to do, which is first educate your customer on a problem, and then second, convince them that you have the solution. How did you approach this twofold sales job?
It's funny you bring that up. I was going through some of our early pitch decks as I was cleaning out all of the company files, and I was looking at probably the one you saw back in 2013. And to answer your question, it's a combination of, you know, especially in the political world, what I like to say is the political industry is full of people who run multi-million, sometimes $100 million campaigns, and they don't come from a business background or a math background. And at the end of the day, what I'm trying to do is get them to buy in some of the math and the ROI calculations that we do, but that's not necessarily their forte. And so it's a lot of explaining it in their language, and then actually doing it and executing. One of the first campaigns we ever worked on, this isn't the Marco Rubio campaign, I'll never forget, we did the pitch, we gave the whole deck thing, we put our price on the table, and the consultant called me up and he said, I don't know exactly what it is you showed me, but I know our campaign needs it, but don't screw this up. And that's kind of what it was, is these campaigns early on knew they needed it, but they didn't quite understand how it worked. And so they were entrusting us to make sure that when they spent the money, what we were given, whether it was testing or whether it was audience creation, modeling, whatever it may be, that it didn't work. And so the education process was a little bit of a leap of faith, and then it was doing good work throughout the years.
Our listeners may be familiar with this painkiller or vitamin model for politics, and I really see the transition here with Optimus and your offering. So what made it flip from something that was good to have, like a vitamin, to something right, that campaigns have to do now, which is a painkiller?
Right. I think the early catalyst was donors wanted it, right? Like early years, 2013 to probably 2016, you know, data science and campaigns was the new hot thing, kind of like, you know, websites and social media was between 2008 and 2012. And so, you know, the early thing was donors were required. They're like, well, if I'm going to give you millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars, I want to know that my money's spent spent correctly and on the right stuff. So that was the early days. And then as of late, it's become, you know, a standard line item in every budget, because no campaign can win unless both sides, or at least your side, is doing the most efficient targeting or the most efficient testing or using some of the latest techniques and forecasting and things like that. And so initially it was the new hot thing. And as of late, it's because everyone's doing it. It's table stakes.
That's a really good example of the outside forces. I mean, the example I always give is you'll never see a candidate's spouse on the org chart of a campaign, but they are often one of the most important decision makers in an organization. And so similarly, you know, the donors themselves don't have a seat at the table when these vendor decisions are being made, but they can be really powerful allies in pressuring your customers to adopt it. Did you have a strategy there, or was it just a matter of, you know, people were sort of tired of seeing money go up in smoke without results for it?
It was a little bit of both. I had the benefit of, I had been working in campaigns since 2006 as an operative and as a small-time consultant. And so I kind of understood the dynamic between the donors and the campaign decision makers. Not always is the campaign manager the campaign decision maker. As people figure out, you know, the people who make decisions on campaigns can have very different titles and very different roles. So I kind of knew how some of the players work there and the dynamics work there. And then, yeah, prior to Optimus, I worked, in the Coke network. So I understood how that all worked and the dynamic relationship there. And so that's a long way of me saying is that it was one of those things that came naturally. And I probably wasn't thinking strategically about it early on, like, oh, let's get the donors on board. But I understood it subconsciously. And that's kind of how we played it is, you know, you need this because your donors are asking for it. I remember one of our early lines was, look, your donors didn't become donors unless they use techniques like this on their own businesses, you know, targeting, forecasting for efficiency, all that kind of stuff. And then these campaigns figured out if they took some of our outputs and some of our results and showed it to the donors, they could get more money. And so it was a very symbiotic relationship there.
That's a really good example, too, of a company getting its timing right, because yeah. You can't force the market, even if this was a good idea 10 years before you had it, but I don't think we were there yet. And so sometimes we see that with campaigns or with companies, they're just too early. And so they may plow ground for people later on, but you were obviously very fortunate to be able to not only create that value, but capture it. We're 9 years on. And you just had a big victory with your acquisition by Donata, which we'll dig into later. But I want our listeners to understand that this was not an overnight success. So talk us through how those first few election cycles went. And what did you do specifically to maintain your conviction about the problem you're solving?
Those are all great questions. And it's kind of linked to the timing one you just asked. Like, the first time I ever sold anything, what someone might call data science, was the Connecticut GOP in 2008. It was for $7,000 and it was supporting their state legislative campaigns. And I don't think any of the people who I sold it to are there anymore. In fact, I know they aren't. But that was the first time that I was able to use some data, quote unquote, data science to help a campaign out. And it helped them win a few seats. Now, they weren't the majority then. It didn't flip a state house or anything. But that was the first time I saw some of the value of it. And then it was a struggle for the next 5 or 6 years as I, you know, played journeyman, going to various states and working on campaigns. I lived in Connecticut. I lived in Florida. I lived in California. Worked out of D.C. It didn't necessarily pay all the bills, but it kind of sharpened my skills about what exactly the product was. And then when I was able to start Optimus in 2013, it really set up what the product was. What we were selling in 2013, 2014, I did not imagine that in 2000 to 2008 when I was selling these small-time projects. It took some time on campaigns to figure those things out and to iterate from there. What I used to say early on is, especially early on, 2013, 2014, if what we have is a nuclear missile, the first nuclear missile, you know, was very cumbersome. You had to drop it out of the back of a plane and it was really clunky. It took 10 years before they put it in a silo and another 10 years till they put it in a submarine, another 30 years before they put it in a briefcase, so to speak. And so that's how data science was. And that's kind of how we kept the conviction over the years is it's the innovation side. Hey, we could do this big and clunky and it worked, but how do I do this either A, better or B, cheaper so I can use it on different campaigns? There are things that we did for Marco Rubio that we could only have done for Marco Rubio in 2016 with that kind of budget and that kind of buy-in that we are now doing on congressional campaigns 5 years later that wouldn't have been possible earlier. And so that drive to kind of keep iterating and keep innovating was a big part of it.
And that's a really good model, I think, for people who are listening who might be thinking about starting their own company or becoming an entrepreneur in this space is that you can start with a service. And anything that you can build a spreadsheet out of, you can turn into an application or a product. And so obviously you started in the industry, you knew the problem really well, and then you developed a playbook that became a product. And I think that's a really good takeaway. Another challenge that we face in the political technology industry is a lack of technical talent. How did you find and recruit employees so that Optimus could continue to scale?
That's probably the secret sauce, so to speak. I mean, we have some good technology and we built it. But especially in Republican politics, when I talk to some of my Democratic counterparts, they're not short of kids coming out of grad school, kids coming out of computer science. They've got, you know, they put a job opening up for an entry-level engineer or a senior engineer. They got 50 applicants. Some of them are coming from Facebook and Amazon and that kind of stuff. When we put those job openings up, we don't get those types of initial candidates. So what we had to do early on is focus on our recruitment. Our early recruits came out of BYU and UT Austin, a lot of state schools locally, and then we'd bring them in as long as they had a base set of skills. I used to tell them, 6 months from now, your base set of skills are going to be 2x. You're actually, you know, a little SQL, but now you're going to know how to deploy SQL in Amazon. Or you know how to use RStudio. I'm going to teach you how to use scikit-learn. We're going to develop it once you have a base set of skills. And that kind of talent development is how we've done it and how we recruited people. Because we will get people who, they might leave a little money on the table because they don't want to go into industry, but we give them an opportunity to work on some political early on. We gave them an opportunity to work on some political stuff they liked, and then we taught them what they didn't know already. I had the advantage because I knew all this stuff, and so I would, you know, teach them, and then they would teach others, but it was kind of a big iterative process.
Yeah, I think that one of the most important things that we see is when someone has really good political instincts and is evidence-based, once you equip them with the skills, they're going to be really good partners, employees, founders, what have you. And, you know, I'll just offer my theory on why it is so different from Republicans to Democrats is on the left, you've got job security. You can work for a candidate and then go back and work at Facebook or Google. We've seen time and time again that that's very difficult for a Republican to do. And then second, if you are conservative, free market minded and entrepreneurial, and you've got those skill sets, you're saying, look, I'm going to go off and raise a bunch of money. I'm going to start my own thing. The cause is not as alluring for you. You'd rather go off and become one of those major donors. But I think we're doing a good job with Startup Caucus of showing that this is a career trajectory. There's a lot of money in the industry, and it's a place that you can have a good career. But more importantly, you raised this point earlier, the tools are becoming more widely available. And there are tutorials out there and really great no-code, low-code tools that people can start using.
One thing I would add too is, you know, Optimus is usually between 15 and 20 full-time employees, depending on the cycle. But I was looking through it over the course of the last 8 years, I think we've cycled through 80 employees. And that's not a bad thing. Optimus was good. And there are other good instances, environments like this in the ecosystem. We train people. I tell people all the time, especially we hire. In fact, about a couple of years ago, we hired a young woman out of Iowa State. She was debating whether to get her PhD in stats or come work with us. And I said, look, if you make your decision that you want to go work in industry, then come talk to me. If you want to stay in academia, stay in academia. She made her decision to come to industry. I said, look, I'm not going to pay you as much as Capital One or Facebook or Microsoft, but I'm going to put you in the deep end in the first 18 months of your career where you're going to be exposed to things that would take you multiple years in industry. So that if you give me 2 solid years, I'm going to teach you something and then you can put it on your resume and you can use that to go get the job you want. She came in, she killed it. She learned a whole bunch of stuff. And I just talked to her recently. She's probably making over $250,000 a year working for a big publicly traded company doing exactly what she wanted. And I don't think she would give up her experience at Optimus. And for the couple of years she was with us, she killed it with us. And I got a dozen other stories just like that. And I think it's one of those things, working inside one of these startup organizations in politics will put you in the deep end. You will do things that you will not be able to do if you work for a big organization. And I think that should be the biggest draw for basically every political startup.
It really does reward people who seek agency and are entrepreneurial and want to take advantage of opportunities, because there is so much to do that no one's going to tell you no if you take on extra things. You're listening to the Business of Politics show. We're joined by Scott Tranter, founder and CEO of Optimus Analytics, a data science and technology company. Scott, our listeners should know that we did work together starting in 2015 on Marco Rubio's presidential campaign, where I was the digital director and you were the director of data science. But even with the success of working your way up to a presidential campaign, Optimus was already expanding into more commercial work. Explain why you were making that move and how you did it.
Coming out of 2016, our candidate didn't go the distance, and we had some very cool tools that came out of that campaign, some very good modeling tools, some very good database technologies and things like that. And at the end of the day, we kind of said to ourselves is, if we can figure out who's going to vote for Marco Rubio in Southwest Georgia, we could probably figure out who's going to buy McDonald's over Burger King. That was the 100,000-foot hypothesis, so to speak. So what we began doing was spending a lot of time with learning about how non-political targeting works, commercials and advertising, all that kind of stuff, and figuring out where we fit in the ecosystem. And I'll be honest, I looked at it, I think we made that conclusion after the 2016 cycle. In 2017, I think we spent $150,000 in what I would call chase costs. That's time on Amtrak up in New York, buying dinners and beers of people at agencies and brands and all that kind of stuff, just learn what the problem was, because we knew they needed what we had, but we didn't know how to insert ourselves in the market. And then we probably spent over the next couple of years easily $1 million in more travel and more chase costs, but in talent, right? Like we stole some people from WPP, which is a publicly traded $20 billion a year marketing holding company. And we brought them in to basically lead our commercial efforts and build up that side of the business. And so it wasn't like we got lucky on one thing and kind of transformed in there. There was a lot of twists and turns. There was a lot of months there where I'm like, man, I've been on a plane every week. I've been on a train in a hotel. I thought we were going to close this contract, but we didn't. Or I thought we were going to get this opportunity, we didn't. It was an expensive multi-year investment that paid off ultimately, but it takes a while to go from politics to commercial while still doing your political business.
Well, it certainly did pay off, because in December of 2021, Donata acquired Optimus Analytics. Donata may be familiar to some of our listeners, but for those who aren't aware, it is a data company that provides audiences for things like surveys and polls. I've used it in the past for recruiting audiences or panels for polls. Scott, walk us through that process. How did the relationship come about? Was this part of your chasing, or did it come about some other way? And then when did the discussions shift to talking about an acquisition?
Sure. Probably everyone who listened to this has consumed Donata product, whether they know it or not. They provide the phone sample for Democratic and Republican pollsters. They provide the online sample for Democratic and Republican pollsters. But they're they're probably a $700-800 million a year business. And politics is not anywhere near. It's a small but significant portion of that. And so they're very large. And so we were a client of theirs. We used to buy stuff from them early on, 2014, 2015. And it took many years to develop the relationship there and develop the contacts. And as you develop the relationship and contacts, you start doing business together. We had our first contract with them where we weren't sending them money, and they were sending us money, 2017, 2018. And over the years, they had gone through CEOs and merger, own mergers and acquisitions. It was just kind of a long slog. And it wasn't necessarily the intent when we signed the engagement with them. If you would ask me in 2016, 2017 that you would be acquired by Donata 5 years later, I would have probably laughed. First of all, I would have said it's not called Donata. They were merging then. So there was a lot of change to happen still. But I would have been like, maybe, I don't know. I probably wouldn't have seen it back then. It kind of transformed over that near the end. Over the last year and a half, they approached us and said, hey, you guys take what we do and you go make more money off of it than we do. So how do we capture the value that you're creating? Basically, what we're doing is we were buying their products, doing our data science magic to it, and then selling what they sold us to for $1. We were selling it for $2. And so they wanted to capture that value. And at the end of the day, most acquisitions, you have to provide value to the acquirer. Sometimes that's talent, sometimes that's revenue. In this case, it was capability that led to revenue. And so if you can create that relationship, whether it's with Donata or someone else, then that's how you get acquired. And that's kind of how it was. To be honest, we went through a bunch of different potential acquirers. They were not the only people on the table, but that took some time too to develop those relationships and go through that process with them. It was a journey. And it wasn't a journey where we said, hey, this is where we want to be 5 years from now. It was let's do these things to put ourselves in a position ourselves to be acquired by a Donata or someone like Donata, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think I want to underline this. This is a really important lesson for our listeners. It's not just politics, although politics, it happens more frequently because there's so much more churn. But you never know where relationships are going to lead. And so it's important to treat everyone you work with respect, because, today you may be on the other side of something, but tomorrow you'll need someone's help. And I think that's just really made clear in your story, right? Because you could have said, hey, this is a client, we're just going to extract our value from them and take. But because it was mutually beneficial, a rising tide lifted all boats. And now you're on the other side of that transaction. And we know it has a happy ending, but what do you wish you'd known back in 2013 when you were getting started to prepare yourself for this exit?
Yeah, and I think this is probably a little bit more stark of advice than you normally get on this podcast, but I don't necessarily have fuck you money, but I kind of got to the point where I don't you know, you care a little bit less. This is what I would tell all of your Startup Caucus members and people in here. Politics is a little bit toxic. It has a connotation to it. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But in the business world, it has a connotation. So what I would have told 2013 me is, if the goal was, in 2013 me, this wasn't the goal. Our goal was to work on a presidential. But early on, if the goal is to get acquired in the commercial space, think about separating your brands, thinking about developing a brand and a persona outside of politics. Have your political business, certainly do that. But if your goal is to get acquired commercially, have a separate line of business, a different division, a whole different company. Because especially in this business environment, this acquisition environment, and I think it's probably going to persist for the next few years, political work can be a liability in an acquisition process, because people look, especially in the data business, you know how many times I had to explain how we're not Cambridge Analytica, or explain, you know, why the stuff we do isn't, you know, hurting democracy or anything like that. I think they're all silly questions, especially for most of the people who listen to this podcast. But those are the questions we had to answer and explain and prove ourselves before we were able to cash checks. And I think that's an important thing. Had I known that, I think we would have started probably earlier than 2016 and done a little bit more forceful diverging brands between Optimus and Optimus Commercial, you know, in 2016, 2017. So probably a little bit more stark advice than you get, but honestly, that's my thing. If you want to get acquired, think about two different brands.
Well, that, I think that is good advice, and certainly one that we see in a lot of other parts of the industry. And I think it's a unfortunate commentary on kind of the status of cancel culture, how poorly regarded politicians are. But that's really helpful advice, nevertheless. So, Scott, I want to wrap up with you looking into the future, because you were an early innovator in big data and politics, which I realize has a buzzword connotation, but you really do big data. What's the next frontier that someone listening to us right now should be looking into if they want to start a business in the political space?
So I have two answers to that. And if anyone's listening to this and they like my answers and they want to talk about funding, or they want to just nerd out about the deal, reach out to Eric or find me on social media. I'd love to chat. But two answers. One is sexy and one is not. The not sexy one is campaign back office. Everyone likes the sexiness of polling and forecasting, or, you know, fundraising or digital or this or that. But there are hundreds of millions and billions of dollars that flow through campaigns that is inefficiently run. There needs to be a QuickBooks for campaigns. And there are some people on here who are like, no, I know X is for campaigns and it's already there. There is not a good technical solution, a QuickBooks for campaigns. And there's a really good opportunity there to make a lot of money. It won't get you quoted in the Wall Street Journal. It's not going to make you campaign manager, but it will make you a lot of money. The sexier answer is go look up, you know, everyone's talking about blockchain and Bitcoin, all that kind of stuff, and Ethereum. And I'm sure we can talk about the value of those types of things. I'm a firm believer that blockchain as a technology, whether it's Ethereum or something else, is pretty cool. And as it relates to our industry, something called zero knowledge proofs, a mathematical technique to trade data and trade things like audience data. And by trade, I don't mean like trade like NFTs, but how data, big data, is transferred between campaigns and how it's used for targeting. It's not going to be something we use in the 2024 cycle, probably not something we use in the 2026 cycle. But when we're talking about 2030 and beyond, I think there's going to be a lot of campaign data, a lot of voter data on the blockchain used for targeting, fundraising, those types of things. So don't quit your job and do it today. But, you know, understand how this works and you'll find an opportunity to make, you know, have a cool startup probably in the next 10 or 15 years.
Well, that's great. And definitely plus one on both of those ideas. If you're interested in that or have some ideas, please do reach out. I'm really glad that we were able to talk to you today, Scott, so soon after this acquisition by Donata, while things are fresh in your mind. So thanks so much for joining us today. You can visit Optimus with the link in our show notes. We've got some good resources there, and you can learn more about Scott on LinkedIn and Twitter. If our conversation today made you just a little bit smarter, please help pass it on by either sharing it or leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. There's someone out there who will also benefit from Scott's story, but they won't hear it if you don't help them find it. So with that, we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.